So I invite Emmanuel Donadieu, so our next speaker. Emmanuel is leading a group of research in tumor immunology at the Cochin Institute, not far away from here actually, and he's also a specialist of examining in situ the immune response against tumors. So I'm sure we'll learn even more on this topic. Thank you, Emmanuel.
Thank you very much, Alain, for the kind introduction and for giving me the possibility to present today. So during my talk, I will mostly focus on T cells in tumors and the influence of the tumor microenvironment in order to make the case that some cells and elements contained within the tumor microenvironment can have both positive but also negative influence on T cells, especially on their migration. So now it's quite well established that in order for T cells to perform their job, to control tumor growth, they need to accomplish a number of steps. They need to respond adequately to tumor antigens. They need to expand, persist, and I'm sure we hear a lot of talks about T cell persistence and the importance of this process. But they also need to make a direct physical contact with their target. And this cell-cell interaction is actually the end result of a series of stepwise events during which T cells rapidly migrate. And I really want to focus my talk on these different steps. So the first step is the extravasation. T cells need to home into the tumor to cross the tumor endothelial cells. Then they need to migrate within a very complex microenvironment. The stroma and in solid tumors are compartmentalized organ with compact tumor islets surrounded by a stroma. And the blood vessels are in the stroma, meaning that the T cells, they need to migrate from their entry site up to tumor cells. Then they need to form a productive conjugate with the malignant cells to form a synapse, to be activated, to degranulate, and to kill cancer cells. And there's still a lot to learn about how these different steps are controlled. But we know that in cancer patients, one or several of these steps are dysfunctional. We know, for example, that the entry of T cells into tumors does not always occur normally. This is mostly due to abnormal vessel structures, reduced expression of chemokines, adhesion molecules, or particular phenotype of the tumor endothelial cells. But nevertheless, even when T cells succeed in crossing the blood vessels, because we know and we've heard that many tumors are enriched in T cells, melanoma, non-small cell lung tumors, at least in many tumors, the T cells are not in contact with cancer cells, but instead enriched in a surrounding microenvironment, the stroma. As you could see here, actually, in this immunostaining performed in lung tumor section obtained after tumor resection, where you could see that the T cells in green are in the stroma in red and the tumor cells are in blue. And when we made this observation more than 10 years ago with a prior PhD student, Hélène Salmon, we were quite surprised to see that the region where T cells should go in fact contained very few T cells. And at the time we counted on a small cohort 5 to 10 times more T cells in the stroma, the white bars, as compared to tumor islets, the black bars. And this defect in T cell, tumor cell interaction could obviously contribute to explain why some tumors continue to grow, but also why some immunotherapy protocols do not always get the expected results. And that fits quite well with a number of clinical data showing indeed that patients responding well to PD-1 blockade, for instance, many T cells are found in the tumors in contact with cancer cells, whereas patients who are refractory to immune checkpoint inhibitors, you have two different profiles, but of course, as we've heard prior by the prior speaker, the immune desert, no T cells, most likely because the tumors is not recognized by the immune system, non-immunogenic tumors. But you have also this profile which retains our attention, the presence of T cells surrounding the tumor cells, the so-called immune-excluded profile. And so the important questions my, many labs are trying to address is why are T cells localized in a stroma as compared to tumor islets, which are the mechanism underlying this distribution, and could we design some strategies in order to promote T cells to infiltrate this compartment? And in order to address these questions, we have in the lab established a 3D ex vivo human model. It's an organotypic model based on thick slices made from human primary tumors. So we have ongoing collaboration with clinicians working at Hôpital Cochin, who provide us with both lung, but now we have also renal cell carcinomas. And the workflow is shown here. In brief, the piece of a tumor, the fresh tumor, nothing is fixed during the whole procedure. Everything is kept fresh. It's first embedded in agarose, and then we cut the piece of a tumor using a vibratum. We usually perform fixed slices, 4 microns slices, and on top of the fresh slices are plated some T cells, could be T cells purified from the same tumor, the TILs, or it could be some T cells which have been genetically engineered to express a CAR T cell. I'll show you during the second part of my presentation. The slices with the T cells are then placed at 37 degrees for half an hour, then rinsed to get rid of the cells that have not entered into the tissue, and then systematically immunostained with a combination of directly coupled fluorescent antibodies in order to label tumor cells, but also stromal cells, stromal component. And then we used fluorescent microscope, either confocal spinning disk microscope or two-photon microscope, to really assess the distribution, the migration of T cells, not only those at the cut surface, but really the T cells that have infiltrated into the tissue. And in this condition, we found, and I'll show you a picture and a movie, that despite having a continual access to the whole surface of the slice, the T cells that we plated, so this is the T cells in green, the stroma is in red, the tumor cells in white, in human lung tumor slice, the T cells again are present in the stroma like the resident T cells. And when we looked at their dynamic activities, so it's one image every 20 seconds for 20 minutes, and you have also the trajectories of each individual cells, which are color-coded, blue for low displacement, orange-red for longer tracks. And again, many T cells do not migrate well. They are quite stuck into the stroma, and we found that the migration was also very much constrained to the stroma. We rarely observe some T cells that migrate from the stroma to tumor islets. And it rapidly appeared that the extracellular matrix, which is a hallmark of growing tumors, was having a detrimental impact on T cells, their motility and ability to reach cancer cells. I won't talk a lot about extracellular matrix because I know that the next speaker, Hélène Salmon, will also tackle this aspect. But just an immunostaining showing the distribution of T cells in green in relation to the tumor cells in blue and in relation to extracellular matrix fibers, fibronectin, but we have the same result with collagen 1 fibers, really showing in many tumors a very thick network of matrix fibers surrounding tumor islets, also oriented in a very specific manner parallel to the tumor stroma interface. And as you could see, the T cells are quite far from tumor cells. Or when they are present, we found that they were very elongated, very deformated along the fibers. And we make some movies, and I'll show you an example there, showing the two T cells, they migrate along the fibers. And so based on this data, and our strategies over the years is try to develop some protocols in order to decrease the amount of collagen 1 fibers in growing tumors in order to normalize the stroma and to permit T cells to migrate and to reach their targets. So there are a number of ways to do that. As a proof of concept, we use the collagenase, as it says, it's specific for collagen, and so we use a bacterial collagenase and decided to treat human lung tumor slices with collagenase and examine the consequences on the distribution of the plated T cells. So on the left, you'll have the control condition. again, the T cells are quite far from tumor cells, and you have this thick collagen network surrounding the cancer cells. After treating slices with collagenase, you could see that there is a decrease in the red signal in the collagen 1 network, and this is associated with a more uniform distribution of T cells, with an average, a twofold increase in the number of T cells in contact with cancer cells as compared to a control condition, which really support our model that the thick network of collagen fibers, both by their density, most likely by the physical endurance mechanism, but also orientation, likely by the Giddens process, keep T cells away from cancer cells. But the use of collagenase in the clinic, in a systemic treatment, is probably very challenging, could trigger side effects. Maybe except in superficial tumors in local regional administration. So we've decided to target another element, this enzyme, lysis oxidase, called LOX, which is involved in the cross-linking of collagen into fibers. You may know that collagen molecules are modified onto lysins by this enzyme, by LOX, creating some cross-links responsible for the big cables of collagen 1 fibers. And there is an inhibitor, specific inhibitor, the beta-aminopropionyl, or BAPN. And so we decided in different mouse tumor models to inhibit LOX and to investigate the consequences on a number of different parameters. And this project has been carried out in a lab by a former PhD student, Alba Nicolas Boluda, in collaboration with Florence Gazzo. But the first thing that we did was to actually establish some relevant mouse tumor models that would possess a number of biological and physical criteria, that is to say, a structure similar to the structure observed in cancer patients, tumor islets surrounded by a stroma, as I mentioned several times, a dense tumor stroma, and stiff tumors. And here is a list of all of the models that Alba tested, both transplanted models, but also the genetic spontaneous model, including the mammary carcinoma model, MMTV-PYMT. So in terms of structure, we found that actually two models were extremely relevant, including the model that I just mentioned, the mammary carcinoma model, but also the KPC tumor model, which is the implantation of a cell line which is derived from the tumor pancreatic spontaneous model. And again, we were very not surprised, but happy to see that in that model, again, you recreate the structure observed in cancer patients with small and compact tumor islets in red, surrounded by a very fibrous stroma, and the stroma and the collagen 1 fibers have been visualized using a specific imaging approach, second harmonic generation, on a two-photon microscope. We also measured the stiffness of the tumor using shear-wave elastography, which permits to do a non-invasive longitudinal assessment of the stiffness of any tissues. And we found, like in a clinical situation, that there was a very good and positive correlation between the stiffness and the growth of a tumor. When the tumor grows, it gets stiffer, again, like in a clinical setting. And as an example, you have the stiffness measured in every single tumor from the mammary carcinoma model. And so on these two models, KPC and PYMT model, we've decided to treat mouse harboring tumors with the anti-LOX and investigate the consequences, first on the tumor stiffness, so again, on the top you'll have the control conditions, B7, 21, 30, when the tumor grows, it gets stiffer. This is inhibited when animals were treated with the anti-LOX. This is associated with a marked reduction in the amount of collagen 1 fibers. Again, you have on the top the control condition characterized by a very thick network of collagen fibers, and this is very much abrogated when animals were treated with the LOX inhibitor. And Alba has analyzed a number of parameters, the fiber width, the curvature ratio, which were very much altered when we block locks. We of course perform real-time dynamic imaging experiment to look at the effect on the migration of T cells. So I'll show you two movies. On the left, you'll have the control conditions, and on the right, the LOX inhibition condition. For the control condition, and again, the T cells are in green, you have also the trajectories. Like in human tumors, the T cells are not migrating so well. But now, when we block LOX, now the T cells migrate much more actively. You could see that the trajectories are much longer. But this strategy by itself, targeting the extracellular matrix by itself, I would say has minor effect or partial effect on the growth of a tumor, as you could see here. The same is true on that model, in the KPC model, when we block PD-1 blockade has partial effect on the growth of a tumor. But now when we combine both strategies, you could see that it markedly decreases the growth of a tumor with many more granzyme B positive CD8 T cells found in the tumors and also associated with much more inflammatory cytokines, including TNF-alpha. For the extracellular matrix, for sure, is an important element, but this is not the only determinant present in the tumors that have a negative impact on T cells. And we also found that macrophages, which are very abundant cells within the tumors, as we've heard, have also a negative impact on T cells, their migration and ability to reach cancer cells. And this project has been done in the lab by a former postdoc, Elisa Peranzoni. The first thing that Elisa did was to perform an immunostaining on lung tumor section. And again, to show that the macrophages, especially the M2-like macrophages expressing the mannose receptor CD206, were predominantly enriched in the stroma. And you have the tumor cells in red. And so now when we looked at the distribution of CD8 T cells in relation to macrophages, and I'll show you a move in human lung tumors, we often evidence some long-lived interaction between both cell types. So again, this is 20 minutes recording, and you could see that in regions mostly devoid of macrophages, and you have the macrophages in red, CD8 T cells in green, in regions mostly devoid of macrophages, the T cells migrate very actively, you have red tracks. Whereas in regions enriched in macrophages, CD206 macrophages, the T cells are mostly arrested, forming long-lasting interaction with the myeloid cell, the macrophages, suggesting somehow that the macrophages could also participate to retain or to sequester T cells in the stroma. And in order to test this hypothesis, we decided in mouse tumor models to remove macrophages using this compound provided by the Plexicon company in the US, an antagonist of the colony-stimulating factor 1 receptor, CSF1R. CSF1, also called MCSF, is a cytokine important for the recruitment and survival of macrophages. I'll just show you two movies. On the left, you'll have the control conditions. Now the CD8 T cells are in red, the macrophages, F480 positive cells in green, very abundant in the stroma, and the tumor cells in blue again, the T cells not migrating so well. So now look at what's happened on the right when we remove macrophages. No more green macrophages. Look at what's happened to T cells. Now they migrate very actively, also more prone to interact with their target. But again, this macrophage degrading strategy or depleting strategy by itself has no effect on the growth of a tumor. You could focus your attention on that graph, which shows the size of the tumor at the time of the sacrifice. The Plexicon condition, when we remove macrophages, no effect. In that model, the same is true when we block PD-1, no effect. However, when we combine both strategies, now we markedly decrease the growth of a tumor with many more T cells found in tumor islets, T cells showing an immense granzyme B release. So the take-home message from this part of the presentation is that for T cells to perform their job, to kill cancer cells, obviously they need to be fully activated, but that is not enough. They need to migrate and they need to reach cancer cells, really highlighting the presence of stromal obstacles, including the extracellular matrix and macrophages that are promising targets in cancer therapies. But now when T cells finally manage to go through all of these different hurdles, they need to form a productive conjugate with their targets. And so we've decided to study this cell-cell interaction using CAR T cells and comparing the behavior of two different CAR Ts. And that project has been done in the lab by Sherazade Kantari-Mimoun and Sarah Barin. And Sarah and Sherazade have been using, as I said, two kinds of CAR T cells. First, some T cells equipped with a CAR specific for CD20 put in contact with human malignant B cells that overexpress CD20, and that model being a positive control for CAR T efficacy. And on the other hand, for solid tumors, we use T cells with a CAR specific for EGFR put in contact with human carcinoma cells that overexpress EGFR. EGFR is a pan-carcinoma marker. Here you have the structure of the two CAR, which only differs at the level of the antigen binding domain. We first use dynamic imaging microscopy to assess the activation of the two CARs in contact with their target. And we focused on the calcium response. The calcium is a second messenger that rapidly increases when T cells get activated. And on the left, I'll show you the condition with the CD20 CAR T cells in contact with the B lymphoma cell line, RAGI, which appear on that movie in a gray transmitted light image. The calcium concentration is coded in solo color, ranging from blue low calcium concentration, orange red high calcium concentration. So it's one image every 10 seconds for 10 minutes. And you could see that the two CAR T, when they get into contact with their target, they show very strong calcium increase. And on average, 80% of CD20 CAR T cells get activated in such condition. Now, when we perform the same experiment now with EGFR CAR T cells in contact with carcinoma cells, we use a number of carcinoma cell lines, including the tumor pancreatic cell line BXPC3. We, by the way, didn't do the epithelial mesenchymal transition, still grow in cluster. No, you could see that the result is very different, and only a minority of EGFR CAR T cells saw strong calcium increase, as you could see here. Most of the CAR T stay blue. So we also confirmed this relatively low level of CAR T activation when we monitored their calcium concentration in slices from solid tumors. Now the calcium scale is a bit different from violet to white. And again, during a 20-minute recording, you could see that only a minority of CAR T cells get activated. The only CAR T cells which get activated were actually those who contact cancer cells at the periphery of the tumor islet, like these cells, for example. We then searched for the mechanism which could explain why CAR T cells in such a settings were not properly activated. And by actually comparing the distribution of cell tens of proteins at the surface of tumor B cells or carcinoma cells, and we use a ultra-high imaging platform developed by Miltini Biotech, the Maxima, we found that one protein, ICAM1, was highly expressed by tumor B cells, whereas hardly detected at the level of the carcinoma cells, including the BXPC3, but also the cholangiocarcinoma cell line EGE1. ICAM1 is an adhesion protein which binds to the integrin LFA1 expressed by T cells, and we know from prior studies that the interaction between LFA1 and ICAM1 plays a very important role in the formation of a synapse between T cells and other antigen-presenting cells or cancer cells. We also had a chance to obtain some fresh tumor B cells from chronic lymphocytic leukemia patients expressing various levels of ICAM1. And so we tested the responsiveness of CD20 CAR T cells in contact with these tumor B cells. And as shown here, a good and positive correlation was found between the percentage of calcium responding CD20 CAR T cells and ICAM1 expression by tumor B cells. And we have other data when we knock out ICAM-1 using CRISPR-Cas9. We decrease the calcium response of CD20 CAR T cells. We decrease their cytotoxicity, really suggesting that the expression of ICAM-1 plays a very important role in the responsiveness of CAR T cells, and also suggesting that a downregulation of ICAM-1 or low expression of ICAM-1 by solid tumors contribute to explain why they are quite resistant to CAR T cells. EGFR CAR T cells. ICAM-1 is a protein whose expression is controlled by inflammation, including interferon gamma, which is massively produced by CAR T cells. So we wondered whether the few CAR T cells, EGFR CAR T cells, which still get activated in contact with their target, would be actually sufficient to drive the expression of ICAM-1. And so we performed a kinetic experiment looking at ICAM-1 expression by immunostaining on slices, tumor slices after adding CAR T cells. So on the left, you have the condition where the CAR T cells have been added after half an hour. And you could see first that the CAR T cells in green are mostly localized in the stroma or in contact with cancer cells in blue at the periphery of the tumor islets, and ICAM-1 is still very low. 24 hours later, we found that ICAM-1 by cancer cells was strongly upregulated. And this is associated with now a majority of EGFR CAR T cells, which actually managed to get into contact with cancer cells. In addition, our data indicate when we block interferon gamma using neutralizing antibody, we prevent the upregulation of ICAM-1 induced by EGFR CAR T cell, really suggesting that the few CAR T cells which produce interferon gamma drive the expression of ICAM-1. Likewise, if we prevent the upregulation of ICAM-1 using cancer cells knockdown for this protein, we decrease for the interaction with EGFR CAR T cells, as you could see here, as compared to the control condition 4 hours after adding the CAR T cells. And finally, we perform in vitro cytotoxicity experiments. And 24 hours of co-culture between EGFR CAR T cells in green and tumor cells in blue, you could see that in control condition, most of the large majority of cancer cells have been killed in such condition, whereas cancer cells knocked down for ICAM-1, unable to upregulate ICAM-1, are much more resistant to EGFR-mediated killing. And the importance of interferon gamma, ICAM-1 fits very well with a recent report by the group of Marcella Mars in Boston showing that interferon gamma produced by CAR T cells could actually reshape cancer cells which become more sensitive to CAR T cells induced killing. And interestingly, she claims that this is really the case for solid but not liquid tumor, also provoking some questions about also the presentation made by Philippe Bousseau. So the take-home message of this part of the talk is that when sufficient amount of CAR T cells reach cancer cells, and we believe this is a number games, and that highlight also the different obstacles that I presented, which are present in the stroma, but when they are able to cross these hurdles and make a contact with cancer cells, they get activated, and through the expression of interferon gamma, that drives the expression of ICAM-1, which promote the formation of a productive synapse between both cell types. So now my presentation comes to an end, and I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues in the team Cancer and Immune Response at the Institut Cochin, and all of our collaborators, including clinicians, who provide us with fresh tumors. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'll be happy to take any questions.